Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Open the glove box, reach in. What have you got?
Jill's and Jim's Joyride.
I'm truly delighted and very excited and this week, Jim, because we've got a very special guest.
Yes.
And that guest is, we're actually Zooming him all the way from Nashville, Tennessee.
Wow.
He's not only one of my dear friends, but he's also one of the greatest guitar players, singers that I know.
I know.
When this man touches a guitar, it becomes a magical item in his hands.
He's twanged his way around the world,
yes,
astonishing people with his plectrum.
That's right. He really has. And now he's here with us. It's Joe Bonamassa.
Joe Bonamassa.
Very welcome to you.
How you doing, guys? Thanks for having me. By the way, I'm stealing that. I've twanged my way around the world, and I'm stealing that slogan. That's great.
But of course, you tour all over the world. Is it something you enjoy doing, moving around and touring?
You know, you don't get into this if you're not nomadic by nature. And you know, the thing I've learned about myself in the last year is I like to move around. You know, even when I'm off, I'm moving around. And it's just being in motion for 30 years and seeing the world, meeting different people. And you know, you're blessed to play music, but you're paid to travel, you know. And you know, I have friends everywhere that we've gone. And it's astonishing that a kid from Utica, New York can pull that off, you know. So I do love traveling.
So
that's one of my favorite parts of it.
You're from New York originally.
Yes, upstate New York, a town called Utica. And, you know, it was just a small industrial blue-collar town, and the weather was bad, and all I had to do in the winter and summer was sit at home and play my guitar, jam along with the Cream records and the blues.
My first record I bought was the Progressive Blues Experiment by Johnny Winter, and I detected quite a bit of you and Johnny Winter together, I thought.
I was a huge fan of Johnny Winter, and the artist that got the first $1 million recording deal was Johnny Winter. And Clive Davis signed him to Columbia in 1969 for $1 million.
Wow.
And that's how hot he was back in the day. He was a stadium guy. I mean, like, in this country, he was a stadium guy, and he was really, you know, deserves to be in the conversation with, you know, introducing the blues to a lot of young people, you know, along with Eric Clapton and Jeff Beck and Jimmy Page. Johnny Winter was especially in America, was on the forefront of that movement, you know, and he was playing straight blues.
Yeah.
But and there's another journey thing, really, because it has to be said that you're very unusual in that there's a lot of British people, really, since the 50s, probably some before then, but certainly huge in the 60s, who latched on to American blues and gospel and rhythm and blues music and all of that. But you did the journey in the opposite direction and latched on to a lot of the British blues people, didn't you?
Yeah, and that was my introduction. I mean, I knew who Jeff Beck was before I knew who Howlin' Wolf was. I'm a product of my father's record collection. You know, he was listening to Cream. He was listening to John Mayall and the Blues Breakers, Jeff Beck Group and Zeppelin and Crosby, Stills and Nash. And only subsequently did I go back and you know, study the masters. But I am a British blues guy. People think I'm British. And I'm happy to, you know, in certain situations, I'm happy to let them think that.
Could you get away with a British accent?
I have a terrible British accent because I was the PBS, like, the PBS Albert Hall guy, people go, you don't sound British. I go, I'm not. I'm from upstate New York. And they're like, well, we thought you were British because you played the Royal Albert Hall. I said, it's not a prerequisite. They do let an American play there once in a while.
They're very easygoing there. Very open, very broad-minded. And of course, some people come on this show and they talk about cars or they like trains. Some people don't like cars, trains, anything. You know, they just talk about walking around. But you actually are a bit of a car person, aren't you?
I like old cars because there's something organic about the driving experience that just I have nothing to do other than preserve my own life and the life of the car while I'm going to the store. And it's a fun hobby, but it's also very frustrating because, you know, every day there's something going. You know, Jules. I mean, have you ever done the Picasso, the old car Picasso? You take a white piece of paper and you stick it under an old car, and 2 days later you pull it out and all the different colors of the things that are leaking from your vehicle come on, and it's like a modern Picasso painting.
Sounds more like a Jackson Pollock.
It could be anybody. It just depends on the vehicle.
Yes, I mean, I think that. What do you in your garage? Do you, in fact, in my garage, when there is a bit of a leak, what we do is put a little bit of sand over it and pretend it hasn't been there, a bit like sort of blotting paper, or a bit like literally
cardboard.
sweeping it under the carpet like it never happened. You know,
sawdust.
Yeah, I have drip pans under all the cars.
What have you got? What cars have you got?
I have a bunch of pickup trucks. I mean, the pickup truck is perfect for gear transport. I just put a whole bunch of guitars and amps in the back of the truck and just set off to the studio. The one thing is that somebody could come by and just snatch one out of the back and run down the street, and I would be
helpless. You mean you don't cover them with tarpaulin or anything?
Also, aren't they then at risk? Because that's the other thing about a pickup truck, which I have realised, of course, unlike an enclosed van, is that the pickup truck is your everything's very vulnerable on the back. You one bit of a snowstorm or something, and suddenly the whole thing is sort of caked in snow. Or rain or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, luckily in Nashville it doesn't snow that much, so I don't drive them in the. I try not to drive them in the weather, but the thing about pickup trucks, they're just work vehicles, you know, and they were designed to be beat up and, you know, but it is satisfying throwing something in the back of a pickup truck.
Yeah, a lawnmower.
You feel like you're accomplished or accomplishing something.
Yes.
So you just you drive around town looking like you've got something to do with a lawnmower in the back of your pickup.
And being a musician in 2020 and 2021, looking like you got something to do is a good thing.
Have you now, because nobody can tour like other musicians, what have you spent your time doing? You know, have you found more time for hobbies, more time to be close to the vehicles?
You know, to be honest with you, I've actually had a pretty busy year. I produced a record for a blues artist from Chicago named Joanna Connor. That was right before the pandemic started. I wrote a lot of the songs and produced a record with my friend Josh Smith for Eric Gales, who's a brilliant guitar player he's from Memphis, but he lives in North Carolina. And then I just did a record with Jimmy Hall that we produced from Wet Willie, and I'm about to start as we speak here our friend Joanne Shaw Taylor's next record. So I've been producing records. It's been an odd year for me, but a busy and, you know, thankfully, you know, successful one.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years, like a chatbot maybe your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
You are actually probably of anybody I know the person that has maybe the most extensive collection of guitars that of anybody I've known. How would you describe your collection?
Well, I'm a bit of a weirdo, if you know what I mean.
Good. That's that's why we got you on the show.
You know, here's the thing. I've been around guitars my whole life. My dad was a guitar dealer. He's since retired and doesn't do that anymore. And I've been around old guitars my whole life. And there's some detractors that would say, well, you know, he got rich and then he spent all his money on guitars and blah, blah, blah. That's incorrect. I've been collecting guitars since I've been a child. And I have about 450 of them spread out in three different locations. And I do set up my houses as theme parks. I'm clearly not married. It's everything a guitar nerd would want. And if they could do it without, because I have no authority figure around me. It's like, I want to hang this sign on the wall. It's done. You know, it's blinking lights. It's a theme park. So I still love the hunt. I just bought a Les Paul from South Africa last month that a friend of mine found, and we kind of had this whole mission where he flew down to South Africa and pulled it out of this music store.
Well, out of interest, just with that one, okay, so that's your latest acquisition, right?
Yeah.
Les Paul from South Africa. Bearing in mind you've already got the 450 guitars and you've got other Les Pauls, what was special about this one particular Les Paul?
Because I hadn't owned it yet. See, that's the thing. It's not about need, and it's not about want. It's about, do you have the collector gene?
Yes.
And the collector gene is very simple. It's you are buying stories, not tangible items.
You get ones that belong to famous people.
I have a few guitars that have been associated with famous people. Like, I own Terry Reed's Tele that he played at Glastonbury in 71. He bought it when he was on tour with Cream. But as far as, like, I wasn't the guy at the David Gilmour auction with a paddle. You know what I mean? I buy original stuff that is made by Fender or Gibson between the years 1950 and 1964.
I like that particular detail as well. I knew, I think I told you that Van Morrison told me about a fellow he knew that would only buy 78 records that were made before, I think it was 1946.
Yeah.
And he said to me, why before 1946? He said, well, after that, they never made any good music.
Right.
Simple as that. Well, fair enough.
Yeah.
That was his. But okay, so what was the story then about the South African Les Paul? What was the story about that? You thought, well, makes this unique. This has to be in the collection to make friends with the others.
Think about it. It's journey from Kalamazoo, Michigan, 1958, and it went to South Africa. Now, in the late 50s, the rand was very strong, and people in South Africa were buying a lot of equipment. So you get a lot of Fender stuff down there, a lot of Gibson stuff, and this family had this Les Paul that played South African folk music in Cape Town, and they sold it and to a music store, and the music store got in touch with us. And the thing about what makes the guitar special is the fact that it has traveled around the world and has been part of this rare guitar that ends up in a place that you don't really realize or don't associate with Sunburst Les Pauls. It's like, well, how does it end up in South Africa? Well, it was originally sold in South Africa, and then it came back here. Now it's currently 20 feet from where I sit, you know, and I was on tour a couple of weeks ago. We did a 5-show run in front of socially distanced audiences, and it hadn't made music in front of people in 40 years, but here it goes again, you know, and that's what, to me, brings it home in full circle.
So it's the journey. There's a film, I think it's called The Gun, and it's the history of a gun from when it was made and who it shot and stuff like that. But it'd be a lot nicer to have it about a guitar, wouldn't it?
Actually, is there such a film exist? Yeah, the life of a guitar, all the different people that own it and the kind of different story about it. That would be a great film.
You know, there's a few guitars that have had some really crazy stories. I've seen guitars that have bullet holes in them. There was one particular guitar I remember somebody had. That guy was shot on stage. He survived, but he was shot.
That's a tough crowd.
Real tough crowd. I'm like, can you imagine a drummer telling him, like, I told you we shouldn't have played Freebird tonight. But no, one of the things about any kind of collectible, and, you know, there's a lot of talk about NFTs, non-fungible tokens. Well, these are fungible tokens in the sense that they have a life. They have, and they will have a life after me, because when I die, hopefully not for a long time, they're not going to dig this gigantic hole and then shove my entire collection on top of me. You know what I mean? Somebody else is going to get them, and they're going to have another life. And if you take care of them, they will last as long as Stradivariuses and stuff like that.
They say about the Stradivarius, or somebody told me, which I believed, although they might have been making it up, but I believed it, so I shall repeat it, that the Stradivarius was made from a particular wood in the sort of forests in northern Italy, which is supposed to have been the same wood which was inhabited by Saint Cecilia, the patron saint of music. And so it was somehow imbibed with music because it was a particular wood.
Plywood.
I think it might have been. Yes, MDF. But is there a particular wood certain guitars are made of that give them a certain life?
Oh, they make them sing. I've heard that the wood makes the guitars sing.
Well, in the case of a Les Paul, it is a maple top on a mahogany body and neck. Now, not all Les Pauls are created equal. Not all 50s Les Pauls are created equal, like the mythical Sunburst one, like Eric Clapton would have played, or Jimmy Page or Jeff Beck. I've played some of those that are really bad and don't sound very good. I've also played magical ones, you know? And I've also played new Les Pauls that are magic and some new Les Pauls that are really bad. Trees don't discriminate. There's some heavy, bad trees. And then there's some really good trees, and it's about who selected these pieces of wood and put them together. That makes the sound.
Can you fly around? Are we allowed to fly now? I'm not sure. Are we? Well, because I was thinking of going to America. I was thinking I'd really like to get a ship, a boat to America, like people used to do in the olden days, and arrive at New York, at the harbour.
Of course, the thing about America is that there's some really fantastic drives. I mean, maybe some of the best in the world, because I was just before you came on, we were talking about the fact that we were going to be Zooming you in Nashville. And Jim looked at the map and observed that Tennessee has an enormous amount of woodland and forestry.
It does.
I did a Google Earth, and it looked like one giant forest, which looked enticing.
So presumably very pretty in the spring and in the autumn and the fall and everything. But is there any great magical drives that you've enjoyed, particularly across America?
I try to, like, on the really long bus rides, I try to wake up early, especially if we're going through, like, Utah or Wyoming or any place out west, and like it's like the desert southwest, or you have the north part. That's that whole corridor: Idaho, Wyoming, Montana, Utah, and even into Southern California or Nevada. It's because it's so incredibly beautiful, the rock formations, and you see these incredible landscapes. And a lot of times, because of the nature of my business, we travel at night, so it all looks just like a black road to me. But if you have an overnight drive and you could see it in the morning, it's really, really, it's amazing how beautiful the drives are in this country. I mean, it's anybody who gets the opportunity to just take a car across country and take their time. It's a magical trip.
I drove through Arizona once. There was a few of us in a car.
Yeah, beautiful.
And that was amazing. I don't know what you call them. Those big pieces of mountain that come out of the ground. They've got names, I can't remember what they are, but I was stunned by them. We stopped for what you might, I don't know another word for it, a piss stop. So we were at the side of the road, and there was a ditch, and there was something in there. So it was desert, apart from these pieces of rock that stick out of the ground. And we called it a grunter, because it was a grunt. It was like, so I thought, it's not a bear. You wouldn't get bears around there, would you?
No.
So I don't know what that was, but we got to Phoenix that night and did sketches in a sports bar of what we thought it might look like, and we all got so frightened we had to retire. I don't know what it was to this day.
That is pretty frightening. And what about the railways and things like that. I would have thought or even as you say, you have your own sort of theme parks at home, things like roller coasters. Are there any other particular things you like as your transport?
I can say in now almost 44 years that Joe Bonamassa has never been upside down. Thank God. I won't ride the roller coasters. I have a staunch, clean record. I've never been upside down. I don't like thrill rides because I don't like the violence of it. It's never been my thing. But I do love a good train ride. But you get that mostly on the East Coast. We don't have a really good railway system here in America. We've never invested in it. Well, we haven't invested in it since the 1800s. And, you know, it would be awesome if we had high-speed rail that would go coast to coast. We don't have that, you know. And you have a little bit on the West Coast. You have a lot of it more central. You know, it's more like in like the New York tri-state metropolitan area. We take the Amtrak from Connecticut to New York or Washington and stuff like that. And it's, you know, it's a great ride because you just, you know, it's you don't have to deal with the highways. You just sit back and enjoy it.
Yeah, I like those. I like the double-decker ones as well.
Yeah, those are great.
My family, going back quite a good many years, lived in Boston. They went from Ireland and Scotland to Boston, and then they moved to Rhode Island and then Poughkeepsie. And that. But my mum says that they went on a wagon train across America, part of the family did, and never came back. They never got where they were supposed to be going to, and they never came back.
And nobody ever heard of them again?
They just disappeared.
Ooh.
That was very, very common back in those days.
Was it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's all that stuff that you see in, like, those old Western movies. It's like it was, like, these pioneer families would go out west. And, you know, back in those days where, historically, the Native Americans, you know, would attack these wagon trains because they were encroaching on their ancestral lands. It was pretty treacherous stuff.
That's what happened, apparently.
Yeah.
They lived...
Sorry to hear that.
No, sorry. We're over it now.
Okay. And now, a message from our sponsors.
Denim bedsheet, and face towel. Available at Kingdom of Denim and Leather.
Just off most ring roads now. Thinking about this guitar thing, you know, what did you say you had? 300 and how many
400.
Guitars? 450. That, I mean, that is a lot of guitars. And I'm just thinking about this collector's thing because I think a lot of people have and it's a great journey you can make a collector's journey, as you said. And it's the excitement of finding the next rare thing that you're after.
Yeah.
Do you go to auctions to buy guitars ever?
Very rarely, because putting a paddle up in the air and, you know, winning it, that's not really a hunt. That's ego. You know?
Also, I tell you what, the auction, I don't like it because the auctioneers say, oh, you've won this thing. And that implies that through skills and bravery and talent, I have managed to get this thing where instead of somebody else. But actually, I've only got it because I'm stupid enough to pay a bit more than something than the next person.
I know what you're saying, and what you like is the hunt, the you know. So have you heard of a guitar which is like some kind of mythical beast which you can go on a long hunt to find?
Yes, the unicorn of guitars.
I did it. I did it a couple of years ago. For years, like this goes back to mid 2000, like 2008 or 9. When I started working with Glenn Hughes, he would tell me about Tommy Bolin. And Tommy Bolin, there was pictures of him, and I was a big Tommy Bolin fan from his work with Deep Purple and Billy Cobham and his solo work. And I was reading a book about him, and there was a picture of a sunburst Les Paul from 1960 that has an American flag painted on the pickguard. And I was like, wow, that's so cool. I didn't know Tommy Bolin had a sunburst Les Paul. So long story short, I meet Tommy's brother in 2011 in Sioux City, Iowa. And he comes to my show and we're having a nice chat. And I said to Tommy's brother, I said, his name is Johnny. I said, did anybody know what happened to this Les Paul? And he goes, well, the last I heard, it was in Utah. And, you know, it was Tommy's roadie. He kept saying it was Tommy's roadie. Well, the trail goes cold until the summer of 2019. And I get a random call from Phoenix, Arizona, going, hey, would you be interested if I could produce Tommy Bolin's Les Paul? I said, well, you have my attention. I said, I don't think you can because many have tried and failed. Well, I know this guy, David, and he owns the guitar. Okay, let's get David on the phone. And my first question to him is like, and he's like, kind of has this kind of very kind of odd speaking voice. He's, hello? And I'm like, David, this is Joe Bonham. Hi, you know, I've heard your music. I'm like, thank you, David. And I said, where do you live? And he goes, I live in Moab, Utah. And I go, ding, 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 ding. And after a few weeks of negotiating, we come to a price. And a guy who works for me named Rick Gould, he gets in a car, because I'm on tour at this point. He gets in a car and drives up with a bag full of money, meets a guy named David at a police station in Moab, Utah, and sees a black guitar case in his back seat. Right? He doesn't know this guitar exists. We're chasing ghosts, but we're chasing ghosts with cash in a bag. Not exactly the smartest thing we've ever done. David takes Rick out to the desert. They do a seance.
Seance?
They do like this kind of spiritual seance, and David summons up Tommy's spirit, and he asks permission to sell the guitar to me, in which Tommy Bolin said, it's okay to have the guitar. Mind you, Rick has not seen the guitar in a black case. All the case says the James Gang and the Denver Broncos, which makes sense because Tommy was in the James Gang. Finally, after 4 hours of this, Rick sees the guitar and it's the one. And he picks it up and he drives it back to San Francisco, and the rest is history, and we finally found it. That's the greatest guitar story that I've got.
But
because of how long it took and how I don't want to say strange, but peculiar the circumstances were, and how much it's an unconventional guitar deal.
When you said it had a seance, so at the end of a seance, the previous owners of a guitar were saying, yes, the next custodian can indeed be Joe.
Yes, but Jules, to be honest with you, I am not sure if this thing is cursed, because now David, he owned the guitar since 1966. He loaned it to Tommy throughout the 70s, okay? And Tommy was his life was cut short after literally the night of his 25th birthday when somebody dared him to drink 25 kamikazes, one for each year.
Oh, no.
The house band at this hotel in Miami was Wayne Cochran and the CC Riders. And you're like, okay, we've heard of Wayne Cochran and the CC Riders, obviously from the Blues Brothers movie, and it was a very famous group back in the day. In that band, that night, was a very young Lee Thornburg, who plays trumpet in my band. He was there that night that Tommy died. David then goes back to Denver, ultimately ends up in Moab, Utah. He sells me the guitar. He's owned it since 1966. He sells me the guitar in November of 2019. David, unfortunately, is killed in a car wreck. In January of 2020.
Oh.
David's sole daughter calls up Rick and knows that I own the guitar, asks, do you know where my father put the money? And then, not to start a treasure hunt, she has lunch with Rick a couple of weeks ago and says, my father's last text to me was, I buried the money in the desert.
Oh.
That's the story.
That's it.
So somewhere, not to disclose figures, there's over $150,000 in cash buried somewhere in the desert of Moab, Utah.
You've got this guitar now.
I have it, yeah.
Are you worried about the curse?
I think it's cursed.
Yeah, but are you worried about it? Is something awful going to happen to you?
Well, then I'll be part of the story.
Exactly.
The story's more powerful.
It's a win-win.
Than your life.
You're so generous.
The curse of the Bolin. But nothing bad has happened to me yet, so...
Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. Fingers and it crossed. Might be, you might get a reverse curse, you know, which will happen sometimes.
But that's one of the best guitar stories I've ever heard. In fact, it is the best guitar story I've ever heard.
It's without question the best guitar story I've ever heard. It's a story of almost the haunted guitar.
Yeah.
I'll just leave you with this. You know, do you know the story of the piano tuner? A piano tuner told me this story, that there was a couple who lived in North London, bought a new piano in the 1950s. And the same man came and tuned it every 3 months for them. And they became friendly with him since the 50s, you know, because they liked him. Anyway, about 4 or 5 years ago, the lady was in the house and she heard him tuning the piano. So she calls out to him and that was all right. She knew he was, you know, he was booked in to come round and he would let himself in if they weren't there. She heard the ding, 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 piano being tuned. So she shouted out, do you want a cup of tea? And he didn't answer, just kept on tuning. He said, oh, you know, Horace or whatever his name is, do you want a cup of tea? doesn't hear anything. Then thinks so, and then she goes in to see him, and he's gone. She sits down to play the piano, and it's the most dissonant, awful sound she's ever heard. He's just like wrecked the piano. So she thinks, well, I don't want to get him in trouble. He's like an old friend. So she calls the shop and says, look, I just don't want to get anybody in trouble. I wonder if he's okay, because I asked if he wanted a cup of tea, and he didn't say anything. And the piano, I just wonder if he should just maybe take a second look at it. That's all. And they said he died a month ago.
Dun, dun. Wow.
What we need now is a haunted drum kit.
Haunted drumstick. Well, look, Joe, thank you so much for being a guest today. It's been absolutely wonderful, an honour and a privilege to talk to you all the way from Nashville. And I hope that the curse is now reversed and it will be the lucky guitar. You know, that's the other thing.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, I didn't know any of this until after I bought it, but I'm lucky to own it. I'm very lucky to own it.
Well, there goes Joe riding on his 450 guitars consecutively in a line. Imagine that.
Imagine that. What an extraordinary sight.
Like a huge snake.
Like a huge snake on the back of his pickup truck.
That's right.
I don't think there's a pickup truck big enough to fit 450 guitars.
This podcast was produced and edited by Molly Stewart.
Sound engineers were James Stewart and George Latham.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.